Please help me welcome our speaker, Allison from Precisely How in Levittown. Thank you, Allison.
Up a cock. Hi, everybody. My name's Allie, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I'm usually only called Allison when I'm stopped by the cops or in trouble. True story. But I do go by Allie. I'm extremely nervous. There's a lot of people here. My heart is beating out of my chest, or at least that's how it feels. My sobriety date is July 11, 2006. I do have a home group that was mentioned. It's Precisely How. It just moved from Levittown, Pennsylvania to Bristol, Pennsylvania. We outgrew the spot that we were in. It is a one-hour speaker meeting just like this. And we just celebrated our one-year anniversary, which is really awesome. And I know that the home group members here know what that feels like and what that feels to be a part of. I am in service. I am an intergroup rep, which is tonight. Thank God I have an alternate because he went on the commitment for me so that I could come here and speak and represent our home group. And I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I have the honor of taking women through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is in of itself an honor and a privilege. Because I know that there is women who are out there who were just like me, who felt like they were inadequate and that they had nowhere to go and that they were lost and that there was no other help for them. And that's how I felt. And that's how I felt for a majority of my life. In a general way, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I got to be honest, I kind of hope you guys read the 12 traditions so that it would keep going so I didn't have to speak for, you know, a little bit longer. But that didn't happen. So I grew up in Bristol, Pennsylvania, which is a very, very small community. My grandparents lived three streets away from us. I have a loving mother and a loving father and an older brother and sister. And my brother actually has this disease on for the past year or so. I've been watching my family be tormented by alcoholism once again. And I will tell you that after my experience and what I've done to my family and watching what my brother is doing to my family right now, it is very, very difficult. I don't feel shameful anymore for what I've done to my family, but I have a better understanding of the hurt and pain that I caused watching my brother do the same things that I had already done. And I'll tell you, like, that's really humbling. It makes me want to become a part of this program even more because of that. I started drinking at a fairly young age. I started drinking when I was about 12 or 13 years old. Back then, I would have told you it was because my parents were getting divorced and my dad cheated on my mom. I know now through sponsorship that that's not the case and that's not why I'm an alcoholic. But at the time, that's why I thought I did the things that I was doing. I thought that I was an alcoholic because of what was going on. I went to a Catholic school, and, like, we were the first family to get divorced in a Catholic school all that time ago. And it was really, really hard to go into school and face, you know, what a religion was telling us was right and wrong. And, you know, what my dad did went against the, you know, 12 commandments and whatever, and it was difficult. So I did. My sister and her friends were going back into the woods because she was in ninth grade and I was in seventh grade, and that's what high schoolers did. And I begged and pleaded, and I wanted to go with her because she was really cool and really popular, and I wanted to be just like her. And so they went back into the woods, and everybody had, like, 12 packs and cases, and everybody was smiling and laughing, and I wanted to be like them. That's what I wanted. I wanted to be happy, and I wanted to smile. And I didn't want to face what was going on at home, which was hurt and pain and suffering. And so after stomping my feet, my sister finally let me go with her. And so we're back in the woods, and I had my first experience with the alcohol. And that night I drank about 12 natural lysis.
I know, it's so gross. I heard the ew. It is gross. But
it got me drunk, and it got me blacked out, and that's the way I drank. And I didn't drink like that. I wasn't an alcoholic from the get-go. I mean, I was, but when you're like 12 or 13, you can't get alcohol. It's not like readily available. You know, you can't just walk into a state store and go, hi, give me everything that you guys have. So what I used to do at that age, like I fell in love with the alcohol. I was a blackout drinker right from that night. The first sip that I had, I wanted more. And that's what I did. And so what I used to do is I would save my lunch money throughout the week. So I would get $3 for lunch, Monday to, you know, $15 is what I came up with on Fridays. And so on Fridays, what I would do is I would turn, and either we would be standing out front of a store where people would be walking by. And, yes, I was one of those people that, hey, can you get me alcohol? I was one of them. Or we would ask our older brothers and sisters to get us alcohol, and they would. And so that's the way I drank, and I drank every weekend because I like the effect produced by alcohol. And I chased it. And that's what I did, and that's what I did from 7th and 8th grade. And then I got to high school. And I don't know, for me growing up, it was socially acceptable to drink in high school. Like, when you hit 9th grade, it was game on. At least that's where it was when where I lived. And, you know, we had these things like spirit night and gym night where, you know, everybody was going back to somebody's house to drink. And my house became the house that everybody drank at. And it wasn't, it didn't happen on purpose like that. It was just, my perception of things was that my mom wanted to make sure that us three kids were okay when we drank. And so what she would do is she would let everybody come over to our house, and she would take everybody's car keys, and we were allowed to drink there. And I'm not saying what she did was right or wrong, but that's just what I grew up in, and that's what I saw my brother and sister do, and so that's what I did. And mind you, during this whole time of all this that's going on, I have not talked to my dad. I wouldn't look at my dad. I can tell you that this was my first deep-rooted resentment towards my dad during this whole time of drinking and everything else. And my dad would try to contact me on several different occasions, and I wanted absolutely nothing to do with him because it was his fault. You know, the reason why I drank was his fault, because he cheated on my family and he walked out on my family. And that's not what happened. He did cheat, and, you know, but my mom threw him out. you see, if I would blame everything on him, and that's, you know, at the time, my perception was that it was all his fault, and it wasn't. I have a problem with perception. That's my problem. And so I get into high school, and, you know, drugs are somewhat a part of my story. I'll say it in passing. I was a really good alcoholic dealer. So that's what I did in high school. And I started to get into a lot of trouble. And I will tell you that, like, I've gotten caught drinking when I was in 7th and 8th grade. I got caught drinking in high school. And the consequences for an alcoholic like me were never great enough for me to stop. But I didn't know that. You know, and I've had teachers and parents and family members tell me, like, do you realize you just got suspended from school for 10 days for drinking? Why haven't you stopped yet? And I'd be like, I don't know, because it's fun, you know? If you had my life, you would drink the way I did. My life really wasn't that bad at all at that time, but I thought it was. And so that's what I start doing, and then I start hanging out with people who drink like I drink. You know, and, you know, then it's not cool anymore because now I'm in high school and I wake up shaking because I need a drink that bad. And if I don't have a drink, I need something else to take me out of me. And so I graduate high school and, by the skin of my teeth, and which is really funny because, I still see my disciplinarians who, like, you know, had to yell at me and write me up or whatever they had to do in high school. And they look at me now, like, and this is one of the cool things about this program is I work for a bank, and I end up helping them with their bank accounts. And it's just ironic that, like, You know, here were these people who were trying to help me all throughout school, and now I get to turn around and help them. And I'm the type of person that you don't trust with money when I'm drinking. Seriously, like I steal my mom's debit card and go out on runs. Like that's the kind of drinker I am. But okay, so I'm in I just graduated high school. So I get a job at a bank, right? And I'm like really good at this job because I'm really, really good at customer service, which you wouldn't be able to tell by right now because my heart is still racing. So I get this job, and you know, I move up really quickly, and I become a weekend supervisor of this bank. And I don't know about you, but when you're 18 years old and drinking and you're an alcoholic, being a weekend supervisor is a little difficult because that's when I drink the most. And it got to a point at this point of drinking where, you know, it's still kind of fun, because you're still going out like Fridays and Saturdays, and, you know, you're waking up and you're hearing funny stories of what you did the night before because you blacked out. And I'm not that bad yet, you know, like the stories are still kind of funny. And you come into work, and like for me, I would come into work, and there was 2 Tylenol and a bottle of water on my desk every Saturday and Sunday because they knew I was out drinking. And if we didn't have any customers, I was back in the drive-thru sleeping of the bank because I could sleep underneath and nobody would see you. And and so that's what I did. But it started to get to a point now where Thursday, Friday, Saturday became Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And it went from, for me, it went from binge drinking to everyday drinking, because my ego told me it's okay to do it. You're out of high school, and this is what normal people do. And, you know, failing out of college is normal also, because that's what I did, because it would be sunny, and I'd be like, well, it's too nice. I don't want to go to school today. I'd rather go drink. And then it would rain, and I'd be like, well, I'm definitely not going to school today, because it's raining and I can go drink. So I failed out my first semester of college, and I worked at the bank full time, and drinking just became my life. Not purposely. I crossed some sort of line, and I don't know how or when that happened, but it did. And so I'm at this job, and my alcoholism starts to become apparent to everybody else. And it had before, like I've had sit-downs with my sister, or I've had sit-downs with, you know, disciplinarians in high school, or, you know, the time I got caught by my mom, the couple times I got caught. But this was, like, for me, it was a big girl job. Like, I had my big girl pants on. I was working in the real world, what I thought. And it started to affect my career. It started to affect my life that I could see now. Now I'm starting to see that it's affecting my life. And I started to have sit-downs with my boss, and they kind of went like this. And if you're an alcoholic like me, you will know that if anybody gives you an out to justify your drinking, you're going to take it, right? All right, so this is what the sit-downs kind of look like. My boss would call me into his office, and I would go in there, and I'd reek of alcohol with, like, 20 tons of perfume on and 3 pieces of cinnamon gum because I thought that would hide my breath. And so I'd be sitting across the table from him, and he'd be like, so we need to talk. I'd be like, okay. And, you know, some of the customers are complaining that you smell like alcohol at, like, 9 o'clock in the morning. Did you get a new perfume or something? Because, you know, I was like, I actually did. I got this really awesome new perfume, but it was kind of cheap, so maybe that's what it is. He goes, okay, well, maybe you should stop wearing that perfume then, because that's what it kind of smells like. And I was like, oh, okay, not a problem. Mind you, I'm not coming into work. Like, I'm barely showing up to work. And I'm a confrontational person. So, like, to get me one-on-one the way I was and not freak out, thank God he gave me an out, because it could have been a totally different situation than what it was. I could have, you know, been an alcoholic, and well, I am, but, like, freaked out really bad, and I didn't. And he gave me the out, and I used it. Just like I had the out of my, you know, dad cheating on my mom. Or, you know, it's her fault. if she wouldn't have started with me in school, I wouldn't have fought her, whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, I am very good at playing the victim, you know, and it's everybody else's fault but my own. I'm really, really good at doing that, guys, and I've done it my whole life. And so what eventually happens with this job is it's at a point where they're like, you know, either you got to go or we're going to let you go. And my ego won't let them fire me, so I quit. And that's what I did. I called up one day, and I knew I wasn't going to go into work that day because I was hungover from the night before. And so I quit instead. And so I did what any good alcoholic does, and I get a job waitressing because it's quick, easy money, and my brother's the bartender, and why wouldn't I go work for this place? So I do. And I'm 19 years old, and I'm stealing from the patrons at the place because I need to get what I need to get when I need to get it. And I don't care anymore. And I don't care that it's hurting my family. And I don't care that I'm not coming home for days on end, even though I'm still living with my mom. I don't care that I haven't spoken to my sister in a week because I just stole $20 off of her. I don't care. I don't care. I will do whatever it takes to get what I need to get. And at this point, too, I got to tell you guys, like, I'm doing all of my nevers. And I black out all the time. So a normal night for me looks like this. I come to. I don't know who he is. I don't know when the last time I was home. I don't know the last time I was at work. The only time I do go to work is when I need more money. My brother and sister work for the same establishment that I do, and they're covering for me again. And it's bad. And you know, during this whole time, we had a lot of family issues going on, too. My grandfather, when my parents separated and eventually got divorced, my grandfather took head of our family and took care of me, my brother, and sister a lot. Made sure that we had school uniforms, made sure that we played every single sport that we wanted to play, and just made sure that we were taken care of. We were by no means rich. We were by no means poor. We were just taken care of. You know, if we wanted something, we got it. And I'm not saying any of that because it matters, but like, I've heard stories of people who they've had everything and they were still an alcoholic. I've heard of people who have had nothing and they were still an alcoholic. I say those things because it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter where I came from or what I did. The reason why I'm an alcoholic is because once I start drinking, I can't stop. And I didn't know this. And so what eventually would happen is I'm like going everywhere, but my sister and I would be out at the bar, and this is where it got for me. And my sister would say, all right, I'm having one drink and then I'm going home and I'm going to bed because I have to go to work in the morning. And I would say, that sounds great. I'm going to do the same thing. And I would walk into the bar, and we'd sit down right next to each other, and she would have one, and I couldn't stop, and I couldn't figure out why. And every time we went to the bar together, I would try to do what she was doing, and I couldn't. And it killed me because I wanted to be like her. You know, and talking about the coming to and not knowing what happened, then throughout the day I would hear the guilt, shame, and remorse and the crazy stories that I did the night before. So I would have to drink more to get those to go away. And that's what I did. And so around this time in my drinking, like I said, my grandfather just, he took care of me and my brother and sister a lot. And I love this man with all of my heart. And this is a man, for me, that would tell me, Allie, I love you, but you need to stop doing what you're doing because we're going to find you in a gutter. And I would hear these things, and I would want to, with all of my might, stop for this man because I loved him. I loved him. I did. He was, you know, my dad, essentially. He took the father role in my family, and I wanted to stop for him. And I wanted to stop when my mom would say stuff like, I love you, and if you're drinking tonight, I don't even care that you're drinking. But can you just call me for a ride home because I don't want you to drink and drive? You know, that scares me. And And I would never call, and I couldn't stop for him, you know. And so I remember I was at work one day, and I went to go answer my phone. I went to go on break, and I went to go call my mom. My grandfather was in the hospital. My grandfather had been in and out of the hospital for quite some time now. And I remember going to answer my phone, and my mom was calling me. And I picked up the phone, and I'll never forget this day ever. Ever. And I remember answering the phone, and it was my brother on my mom's phone. And he was like, you know, you need to get to the hospital. He was like, your grand, you know, Pop-Up, that's what we called him. He's like, Pop-Up's not going to make it, and you need to get to the hospital to come say goodbye. And so right on 95, I shot down to the hospital. And I walked in, and everybody from my family was there, and I got to have a couple minutes alone with them. And I don't remember what I said. I just remember telling this man that I loved him. And I did. And I, you know, and we, everybody got there. And for anybody who doesn't believe in God, there is a God by all means. They waited until I got there to say goodbye. And my grandfather died shortly after I got there, and I was the last one to get to the hospital. He could have went at any time. And I'm not saying it was because of me that he didn't. Like, I believe that God waited for him to pass so that I could get there and say goodbye to him. And shortly after I got there and got to say what I needed to say, he passed away. And I remember after that, my life got completely hazy. I was just telling somebody a story the other day. I have random flashbacks of stuff that have happened, and I remember one time of coming to in a van full of Russians. Why? I don't know. But I remember this memory, and this isn't a delusion. This is what happened. And they dropped me off at my front door. I don't know. That's what happened. Like, I don't know how else to explain it. But that's what I do. Like, that's where my alcoholism takes me. And so what happened in this short 6 months of, and I'll tell you, like, I went to a doctor, and I went to this doctor, and she was this short Indian woman, and because my mom thought, everybody thought I was depressed, and if I just got help, if I just saw a doctor, I would be okay. We didn't know it was alcoholism. You know, we were trying to look for external things to fix internal things, and a doctor for me was one of them. And so I go to see this short little Indian doctor, and I'll never I think this is funny. So I go see this doctor, and she makes me draw out a family tree. And, like, I'm trying to figure out this tree, and I, like, know my mom, my dad, my brother, my sister, my grandparents on the other side, my cousins, and that's it. But you don't know your extended. Now I don't know my extended family. I'm 20 years old. I don't know anybody else in my family. This is all I know. Well, you need to find out more. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about, lady. I was retarded. I was messed up. I was clearly in a haze. And so I'm sitting with this woman, and she goes, you know, so you drink? And I said, yes. And she goes, how much do you drink? And my ego was like, you know, like every day. And she was like, so you're an alcoholic. And I was like, no, I'm not. She's like, you're an alcoholic. I'm like, no, I'm not. Don't stop it. Stop calling me an alcoholic. And I'm getting, here I am, getting defensive of the truth. You know what I mean? Because somebody's actually pointing out the truth in me, and I don't like that. And so I'm going to defend myself. I'm not an alcoholic. And she started yelling at me. You're an alcoholic. You're 20 years old. You need this, this, and this. And I'm like, all right, lady, that's enough. Just give me my script, and I'm out. And that's what she did. She gave me a script of Xanax. I turned around and sold it, and off to the races I went. Because that's what I do. And so what happened after that is I was driving down 95, and I pulled the wheel out of the person's car that was driving. It was my car. Somebody else was driving it because I was too wasted. And I pulled the wheel out. We did 2 360s in the middle of 95 drinking and driving. There was another situation where me and a girlfriend of mine were driving down 95, and we went to go get on to the ramp to go north to go home, and we got on the ramp where cars were coming at us. There have been situations where I've gotten pulled over by cops, and because I knew some of the cops in the small town that I grew up in, they took my beer and let me go, which they should have never have done. I've had more hit and runs than I know what to do. I'll be making amends for those people for the rest of my life, because I'm sure somebody's going to show up one day and be like, I know it was you that hit my car, and I'm going to be like, it probably was. But what happened is around July 9th, I woke up, I came to, and I was somewhere where I shouldn't be, as most of you guys use your own imagination. And I was somewhere where I shouldn't have been. And I come to, and this person was like, your dad and your brother are knocking on the front door, and you need to get your stuff, and you need to get out of my house. And I was like, oh, shit, this isn't good. And, like, not that my brother was there. It was more like I heard my dad. And, like, if my dad's there, something's up. And so I walk out front, and my mom's car's there. Because I totaled my car in the accident, and I'm not supposed to be driving. And so I walk out, and my mom's car is in the middle of the street with all the windows down and the keys in it, and the door's still open. Now, I don't know what time I pulled up to this person's house, so I don't know how long it's been sitting there for. I'm like, okay. So I get in the car, and there's my mom's cell phone. And I go, all right, this really isn't good. And then I look, and there's her MAC card and everything. Just I had everything of my mom's because I had nothing. And so I'd stolen everything. And even, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, we didn't have a house phone. We had cell phones because it was stupid to have a house phone when all of us used our cell phones. And I couldn't pay my bill, so I stole my mom's. And I didn't have a car because I totaled it and couldn't pay the bills, so I stole my mom's. And I didn't have any money, obviously, so I stole my mom's. And so I get into the car and I drive home. And I walk in, and my family had an intervention for me. And I was still completely wasted from the night before, so don't judge me when I tell you guys the story. And so I walked in the house, and everybody sits down, and right out of Legacy from Intervention, too, we love you. We really love you. We think you need help. And so everybody went around the room and told me what they thought, and I'm still wasted, so I decided to tell everybody what I thought about that. So my sister Rachel, da da da, you know, my brother, da 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 da, my mom, and I love my mom, so like I wasn't that harsh on my mom. So I was like, Mom, it's okay, like whatever. But then it got to my dad. And so I'm screaming at my dad, and I said, Dad, I don't even know why you're here. You're nothing but a sperm donor, and I wish you weren't in my life. Broke the man's heart. Completely broken too, hysterically crying, left. I've already attempted suicide 2 times prior to this, okay? So this is my 2nd or 3rd attempt. I don't keep count, guys, but that's what I do. Because I want out. I want out of the way I'm living in. I don't know that there's AA, and I don't know that there's a solution. I don't know anything. I'm 20 years old, and I'm scared to death, okay? So what I do is I go upstairs, and I threaten to commit suicide, and I just wish that everybody would leave me alone. And that's the way I drank. I drank for everybody to leave me alone. I drank so that the pain and suffering would just stop, because in all honesty, that's all I wanted. In the short amount of time that I was living, I was in enough pain and suffering that I didn't know what to do. So I thought that suicide or alcoholism was the only way to go. And so I threatened suicide 1 more time. And 2 cop cars and an ambulance later. No one else had that experience? Oh, cool. I'm sitting with my mom, and I decide to go to treatment. And so that's what I did. And I went to Eagleville, which was 1 hour and 45 minutes to where I live, and I'm shaking, and I can't catch a sober breath. And my loving sister, I was at this place because I didn't have insurance. And so my mom and my sister had met me at this place before I was getting on the bus to come up to Eagleville because I was county funded. And I remember, my mom and sister pulling up, and I had no clothes, and the clothes that I had on didn't fit because I was so tiny. I was 20 years old, and I think I weighed maybe 90 pounds soaking wet, which is like this. It was bad, and bags underneath my eyes, and I looked terrible. And so what happened was is my mom and my sister show up to this place before I get on the bus. And my sister comes crying, and my sister's my best friend, and she always has been, and she still is to this day. I was talking to her on my way up here. And so my sister stops at the dollar store and gets me a card and a little bag with a teddy bear in it, and it says, "Get well soon. I love you." You know, we didn't know what was wrong with me. I didn't know what was wrong with me. We just all knew that I needed to get better. And so I went to rehab, and I'm thinking that I didn't do heroin. I didn't do, you know, I didn't do any of that stuff. And if you did, that's okay. Good for you. Well, not good for you. Not good for you. That's not what I meant. I mean, I did drugs, but the harder stuff just wasn't a part of my story. And I'll tell you why in a minute. So we're sitting in rehab, and I'm out of myself, and I have nothing now. I have nothing. I'm not on Xanax to calm me down for my nerves, and I hallucinate in rehab because that's how when I detoxed off of the alcohol, I started hallucinating, and because that's how bad I was. And so now I don't have anything in me whatsoever. Now I'm really dying. Now the anxiety is really bad because now I'm left to my own devices, and I have nothing. And so these people smuggle in heroin. And I go, "Oh, well, I've never done that, so why don't I try that?" I didn't, by the grace of God, and all those people were eventually kicked out of the rehab. But when I got out, and all right, so that happened in rehab. And so I get out of rehab, and I go home for a little bit. And I go to this clubhouse, and because the people at the rehab that I was at told me, when you get out, get a sponsor and go to AA and raise your hand and tell them that you're new and do 90 and 90 and get a sponsor. And this guy just kept saying it. And I'm like, "Oh, all right, dude, we get it." And so I get out and I go to a meeting the first day I'm out and I raise my hand and I tell them that I'm new. And they say, "Just keep coming back." I'm like, "Oh, okay. Well, that's easy." So then the next day, now I'm living at home with my mom. Next day at a meeting, I'm new. I need a sponsor. I need, this is what I was told to do. "That's great, honey. Just keep coming back." I'm like, "Okay." So I raise my hand, and I'm at it. It's the third or fourth day, and I raise my hand, and I don't know how much longer I can just keep coming back for, because I need something to take me out of me because I'm so uncomfortable. So what happens is I get into a fist fight with my mom, dead sober, because I'm crazy. I don't know what the fist fight was about that day. I don't even know. Something about the internet. And I'm sure my mom couldn't even tell you what it was. It doesn't matter. My point of the story is that you take all of that away from me, and I'm still an alcoholic because I'm still resentful, and I'm still feared up, and I'm still scared. And the minute you attack me, I'm going to attack you back because I have no spiritual principles. I have no defense. I have no defense against anything, and I don't know how to handle the world. I turned 21 in rehab, so now I'm a 21-year-old scared kid. I'm a kid, and I'm still a kid. But and I don't know what to do. So I get into a fist fight with my mom, and these girls were talking about going to a recovery house. And so I moved into a recovery house because I was no longer, my mom said I was no longer welcome to live with her. And I said, "Okay, well, that's fine." So I moved literally 10 streets away into a recovery house, real far. And I moved into the recovery house, and about 3 days there, a girl walked in. And she looked at me and she said, "Come on, let's go talk." And so we did, and she told me a little bit about herself and the way she started. She was my age, and she had 3 months sober, and she started to talk to me about herself. And, I related to everything that she said, and I thought she was full of shit because I didn't know how she could have 3 months sober and be happy because I only had, maybe 2 months. So, what is she doing? She had to be on a drug because there's no way. There's just no way. And what this girl proceeded to do was take me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. When it gets to the point, when we started going through the book, and She started to point out things like the insanity and that, you know, every time that I went out drinking, I thought that that time was going to be different or that I was like other people in the sense that I could drink like them one day. I thought about the situations in my life, the way I drank when I sat next to my sister on a bar stool, and I could never drink like her. So I was like, all right, that makes sense to me. I get that. And she had the same experience. And when it talks about the powerlessness of it, and I got that because once I started, I couldn't stop. That's I have no self-control. I have no power. I get that. But when it came to the book, in the book, and it said, we conceded to our innermost selves that we were alcoholic. This was the first step in recovery. Was huge for me because that was the first time in black and white I could see that that was my problem. I had people tell me my whole life that I had a problem. We all knew I had a problem. We just didn't know what it was. And until you know what the problem is, you're not going to be able to get a solution for it. That has been my experience. That might not be yours, but that was mine. Until I could see it and admit it to myself, not have people yell at me and tell me and judge me or anything else, when somebody met me one-on-one and showed me this and I could see it for myself, was I able to begin to heal. And that's what happened. And so I went on with the work. And when it got to step three, I had a very hard time believing in God. Because if there was a God, then why did he break up my family? And why did my dad cheat on my mom? And if there was a God, then why am I the person that I am? And why did I do all of those bad things? And if there is a God, most importantly, why did he take away my grandfather away from me? And God bless this woman because I was very angry. I was very angry and I hated God and I never thought that I'd be a God person and I am. And so this girl, I'm telling you, God bless her because she sat with me and she said, your grandfather was in a lot of pain and suffering, wasn't he? I said, yeah, he was. And she goes, well, don't you think that maybe God took him out of his pain and suffering that day? Maybe God didn't want your grandfather to hurt anymore. Your grandmom stopped crying, didn't she? Because she knew he was okay, right? And I was like, yeah. She's like, yeah, God's a pretty powerful guy. What do you think? She was like, do you believe that I believe? And I was like, you know what? I have nothing. So, yeah, that's fine. And, you know, since then, my God isn't the same God it was then. My God is forever changing because I'm forever changing. And so I went on and at the time, I did the most honest and thorough fourth and fifth step that I could. Okay. And then I went on to six and seven, try to remove this stuff that's blocking me off. And so I get to nine, right? I did eight. I really don't want to take everybody through the steps, but I'm trying to get to some, you know, pretty key points for me. And so I didn't think that this was working for me. You know, I just didn't. I thought, okay, well, I'm only 21 years old, so I'll do all this stuff. And if it doesn't work, I'm going to drink again anyway, but what the hell? So I get to the point of making amends. And, you know, my sponsor, she was harping on me, you know, this is what you got to do. And like, I'm the 9 times out of 10 that people kicked me out. I wasn't the case where 9 times out of 10 people were like, we love you. It's great. Keep going. Yay. No, like I was that distressful in my drinking career that people had kicked me. I was kicked out of my mom's car. My brother wanted absolutely nothing to do with me. Told me I was a complete and utter scumbag, didn't want to hear it, wanted nothing to do with it. And she would say, you know, did you call your dad? No. Why not? You got to call him. You got to make an amend. I'm like, no. But you have to. No. And I'm telling you, I'm stubborn because I don't think that this is going to work for me. So she's like, all right, well, start doing this. Why don't you pray for the willingness to do this? And I'm like, okay. So I start praying for the willingness, and I muster up enough courage. Probably God inspired. It was God inspired. And I called my dad. And so I called my dad. My dad's a truck driver for Wawa. And he drives like 12, 13 hours a day to deliver to all your Wawa. So when you're at your Wawa and you see some guy, give him a wave because it might be my dad. And he's awesome. And so I called my dad. And my dad had just got done working an all-night shift and came. I lived in Bristol at the time, and he lived in Westchester. So we drove all night, first job, and drove from Westchester to Bristol. And I was living in a recovery house at the time, and I wasn't making a lot of money. And I was signing over my paychecks to pay for my rent. And this specific time, I did not give over my whole paycheck to the house that I was living in. I saved $20 because that's what my sponsor told me to do. So I will blame it on her that I wasn't honest that time. And I took the $20, and the closest restaurant to me was McDonald's. So I took my dad to McDonald's, okay? And I offered to buy him dinner, and because that's all I could afford. And I sat across from the table, and my dad, seriously, he spent almost all of my $20. So I think I got a dollar double cheeseburger and a soda, and my dad got the rest. And so I'm sitting across the table from my dad, I just started, Dad, I love you. I've loved you this whole time. You're an amazing man. And I know I've been a terrible daughter. And my dad looked up. And, baby, I forgive you. I forgive you for everything that you've done. He said, that day that me and your brother came to get you, the first story he told me, he said he had a gun strapped to his back. And I was coming in there to get you. And I didn't care what it took because my daughter was coming home with me that day. And I love my dad. My dad's like the man. And it's been amazing. Thank you. Sorry. Later, two years after I talked to him, I said, Dad, do you remember that story? Da, 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 da. And he goes, I told you I only had one gun. I said, yeah. He goes, I had two. I said, I had one strapped to my back and one strapped to my ankle. And I'm pretty sure he said, I have a third one in my car in case your brother needed it. Dead serious. Later on, when I started to date in the program and I would bring people to meet my dad, the first thing my dad said, my dad's a really big hunter, and the first thing he said to the first guy that I really, like, brought home, he goes, do you like to run? And the kid was like, excuse me? And I was like, oh my God, Dad, please. He's like, no, I'm a hunter, and I like to hunt, so I hope you like to run. Don't hurt my daughter. And I'm like, oh my God. He's awesome. I have an amazing relationship with my dad today because I'm able to show up and be a daughter because of the 12 steps and God. You know, I lived a very purposeless life. I felt like I was nothing. I'm different than what I was then. I'm a completely different person. And like I said, I'm ever changing. Are there times that come throughout my life and in the past 5 years where I felt less than and where I've been resentful and where I've been dishonest and where I've gossiped and where I've done stuff wrong? Absolutely. I've done almost everything wrong in AA except relapse. I've gossiped. I've hated God. I've turned my back on sponsees. It is amazing that I haven't drank. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's crazy. Every single experience that I have had in the past 5 years have made me turn around and give my experience to share with somebody else, because somebody else would walk into my life and say, oh my God, I'm going through this. And I'd be like, it's okay, I've been there. How can I help? What do you need? I'm actually going through some growing pains right now. I just moved from Bristol to Fort Washington, and don't laugh. I know it's not a far move, but to me it is. I've never lived anywhere outside of my small recovery bubble. I've never lived any more than 10 minutes away from my mom or my grandmom or my brother and sister. And it's different, and I'm not good with different, and I'm trying to be. In the past 3 months, I've moved, I've gotten a new job, and I've gotten a new sponsor, and I'm starting to look for a new home group. And I don't know about you guys, but for me, that's a very scary place to be because it's a lot of change. I'm an alcoholic, and I don't know how to deal with change well, and I'm trying. Trust me, I'm down on my knees praying a lot more than I ever have. And I know it's such a small move, but for me, it's huge. And it's funny because, like, now I'm like, all right, well, I moved 20 minutes away. I want to move to North Carolina. You know, because I'll take it to an extreme because that's what I do. My life is absolutely one of invitation. I have a higher power that is amazing. And that's really what I was looking for my whole life. I was just looking for somebody or something to accept me and love me for who I was. And that's what I found in a God. And when I found that, I can tell, I remember the moment when I felt God in my heart for the first time. And I remember when I was drinking, I couldn't look in the mirror. I hated looking at myself. I thought it was disgusting. I thought it was dirty. I didn't understand how you liked me, and I had absolutely no self-respect for myself. So therefore, how could you respect me? And if you did respect me, I didn't understand how. I just didn't. And I remember I was like a year and a half, 2 years sober, and I remember it just came out of nowhere, this overwhelming sense of peace. And I remember I was getting ready to go somewhere, and I remember looking in the mirror, and I saw for the first time a reflection looking back at me, and I liked it. I liked it, and I liked the person that I was. And that's a really awesome feeling. And I love who I am today. I'm not perfect. I'm not going to tell you guys that I've done. I can't. I'd be lying. I'd be lying if I told you guys I was perfect and that I practice this to the best of my ability every day. I don't. I try as much as I can. Is there areas in my life where I'm lacking and that I could use improvement? Absolutely. And when the pain gets great enough, I will change it because that's what I do. But from the person that I was to the person that I am, man. And it's all because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I get to go back to clubhouses like I first went to when I get to share a message of hope. And I get to talk with young women who come into this program like me at 20, 21 years old. And think that they're not going to make it or that it's not for them. And I can tell you, like, if you're anything like me, this will work. You have to do the action. You have to put the work into it, but it does. And I will tell you that the benefits that I've received from this are more than I ever thought I would get. I never thought I would be a daughter that I am tonight. My mom's awesome. My mom's like, you need to call me every day. And I'm like, Mom, I'm only 20 minutes away. And she'd be like, no, I just miss you. I just love you. My mom didn't say that to me for a really long time. She kicked me out of her car when I tried to make an amends to her. Like, it's small things like that. I remember when my grandma gave me the key back to her house and said that you're allowed back here. And I was like, are you sure? Like, I was serious, though. Like, I'm like, Grandma, I'm like, are you sure? Like, because I was unsure of myself. You know what I mean? Like, I was still scared. Like, that's a lot of responsibility for me. But it's like small stuff like that. And, you know, I've had people where their sisters or their daughters would need help and people called me. And, like, I'm useful today. And that wasn't like that for me. And that's all I have. Thanks for letting me share.